Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading from the Krishna book. We're still in the first chapter here, the advent of Lord Krishna. And Vasudeva is trying to pacify Kamsa still here, after he heard the omen in the sky that he will be killed by the eighth child of them, of Vasudeva and Devaki. Krishna Katha is so simple, simply by hearing, reciting, or Prabhupada says even someone who's just slightly interested in Krishna consciousness or even unwilling to hear, he becomes purified. So this is a great opportunity for myself and all of us to become purified. Quote, this is Vasudeva speaking. This body is exactly like one of the bodies which we always see in dreams. During our dream of sleep, we create so many bodies according to mental creation. We have seen gold, and we have also seen a mountain. So in a dream, we can see a golden mountain. By combination of two ideas, Sometimes in dreams, we see that we have a body which is flying in the sky. And at that time, we completely forget our present body. Similarly, these bodies are changing. When you have one body, you forget the past body. During a dream, we may make contact with so many new kinds of bodies. But when we are awake, we forget them. And actually, these material bodies are the creations of our mental activities. But at the present moment, we do not recollect our past bodies. I was just listening to a lecture. It was very interesting. Prabhupada said, we're rotating throughout the whole universe in different types of bodies just to fulfill our damn desires. So he said, therefore, we should have no desires, just simply desire Krishna and to serve Krishna, and then everything will be revealed to us. The nature of the mind is flickering. Sometimes it accepts something, and immediately it rejects the same thing. Accepting and rejecting is the process of the mind in contact with the five objects of sense gratification: form, taste, smell, sound, and touch. In its speculative way, the mind comes in touch with the objects of sense gratification. And when the living entity desires a particular type of body, he gets it. Therefore, the body is an offering by the laws of material nature. The living entity accepts a body and comes out again into the material world to enjoy or suffer according to the construction of the body. Unless we have a particular type of body, we cannot enjoy or suffer according to our mental proclivities inherited from the previous life. The particular type of body is actually offered to us according to our mental condition at the time of death. The luminous planets like the sun, moon, or stars reflect themselves in different types of reservoirs, like water, oil, or ghee. The reflection moves according to the movement of the reservoir. The reflection of the moon is on the water, and the moving water makes the moon appear to be moving. But actually, the moon is not moving. Similarly, by mental concoction, the living entity attains different kinds of bodies, although actually he has no connection with such bodies. But on account of illusion, being enchanted by the influence of Maya, the living entity thinks that he belongs to a particular type of body. That is the way of conditioned life. Suppose a living entity is now in a human form or body. he thinks that he belongs to the human community, or a particular country, or a particular place. He identifies himself in that way, and unnecessarily prepares for another body, which is not required by him. Such desires and mental concoctions are the cause of different types of bodies. The covering influence of material nature is so strong that the living entity is satisfied in whatever body he gets, and he identifies with that body with great pleasure. Therefore, I beg to request you not to be overwhelmed by the dictation of your mind and body. Vasudeva thus requested Kamsa not to be envious of his newly married sister. One should not be envious of anyone, because envy is the cause of fear, both in this world and in the next. When one is before Yamaraj, the Lord of Punishment after death, Vasudeva appealed to Kamsa on behalf of Devaki, stating that she was his younger sister. He also appealed at the auspicious moment, at the time of marriage. A younger sister or brother is supposed to be protected as one's child. The position is overall so delicate, Vasudeva reasoned, that if you kill her, it will go against your high reputation. In this way, Vasudeva tried to pacify Kamsa by good instruction, as well as by philosophical discrimination. But Kamsa was not to be pacified because of his association was demoniac. Because of his demoniac association, he was a demon, although born in a very high royal family. A demon never cares for any good instruction. He is just like a determined thief. One cannot give him moral instruction, but one can give him moral instruction, but it will not be effective. Similarly, those who are demoniac or atheistic by nature can hardly assimilate any good instruction, however authorized it may be. That is the difference between demigods and demons. Those who can accept good instruction and try to live their lives in that way are called demigods. And those who are unable to take such good instruction are called demons. Failing in his attempt to pacify Kamsa, Vasudeva wondered how he could protect his wife, Devaki. When there is imminent danger, an intelligent person should try to avoid the dangerous position as far as possible. But if, in spite of endeavoring by all intelligence, one fails to avoid the dangerous position, there is no fault on his part. One should try his best to execute his duties, but if the attempt fails, he is not at fault. Vasudeva thought of his wife as follows. For the present, let me save the life of Devaki. Then later on, if there are children, I shall see how to save them. He further thought, if in the future I get a child who can kill Kamsa, just as Kamsa is thinking, then both Devaki and the child will be saved, because the law of providence is inconceivable. But now, somewhere or other, let me save the life of Devaki. There is no certainty how a living entity contacts a certain type of body, just as there is no certainty how a blazing fire comes in contact with a certain type of wood in the forest. When there is a forest fire, it is experienced that the blazing fire sometimes leaps over one tree and catches by the influence of the wind. Similarly, a living entity may be very careful in the matter of executing his duties, but it is still very difficult for him to know what type of body he is going to get in the next life. Maharaj Bhart was very faithfully executing the duties of self-realization, but by chance he developed temporary affection for a deer, and in his next life he had to accept the body of a deer. Vasudeva, after deliberating on how to save his wife, began to speak to Kamsa with great respect. Although Kamsa was the most sinful man, sometimes it happens that a most virtuous person like Vasudeva has to flatter a person like Kamsa, a most vicious person. That is the way of all diplomatic transactions. Although Vasudeva was deeply aggrieved, he smiled outwardly. He addressed the shameless Kamsa in that way because he was so atrocious. Vasudeva said to Kamsa, "My dear brother-in-law, please consider that you have no danger from your sister. You're awaiting some danger because you have heard a prophetic voice in the sky. But the danger is to come from the sons of your sister, who are not present now. And who knows, there may or may not be sons in the future. Considering all this, you are safe for the present. Nor is there cause of fear from your sister. If there are any sons born of her, I promise that I shall present all of them to you for necessary action." Kamsa knew the value of Vasudeva's word of honor, and he was convinced by his argument. So for the time being, he desisted from his heinous killing of his sister. Thus Vasudeva was pleased and praised the decision of Kamsa. In this way, he returned to his home. Each year thereafter, in due course of time, Devaki gave birth to a child. Thus she gave birth to 8 male children, as well as 1 daughter. When the first son was born, Vasudeva kept his word of honor and immediately brought the child before Kamsa. It is said that Vasudeva was very much elevated and famous for his word of honor, and he wanted to maintain this fame. Although it was very painful for Vasudeva to hand over the newly born child, Kamsa was very glad to receive him. But he became a little compassionate with the behavior of Vasudeva. This event is very exemplary. For a good soul like Vasudeva, there is nothing considered to be painful in the course of discharging one's duty. A learned person like Vasudeva carries out his duties without hesitation. On the other hand, a demon like Kamsa never hesitates in committing any abominable action. It is said, therefore, that a saintly person can tolerate all kinds of miserable conditions of life. A learned man can discharge his duties without awaiting favorable circumstances. A heinous person like Kamsa can act in any sinful way, and a devotee can sacrifice everything to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kamsa became satisfied by the action of Vasudeva. He was surprised to see Vasudeva keeping his promise, and being compassionate upon him, pleased, he began to speak as follows. "My dear Vasudeva, you need not present this child to me. I am not in danger from this child. I have heard that the 8th child born of you and Devaki will kill me. Why should I accept this child unnecessarily? You can take him back." When Vasudeva was returning home with his firstborn child, although he was pleased by the behavior of Kamsa, he could not believe in him, because he knew that Kamsa was uncontrolled. An atheistic person cannot be firm in his word of honor. One who cannot control the senses cannot be steady in his determination. The great politician Chanaka Pandit said, "Never put your trust in a diplomat or a woman." Those who are addicted to unrestricted sense gratification can never be truthful, nor can they be trusted with any faith. At that time, the great sage Narada came to Kamsa. He was informed of Kamsa's becoming compassionate to Vasudeva and returning his firstborn child. Narada was very eager to accelerate the descent of Lord Krishna as soon as possible. He therefore informed Kamsa that in Vrindavan, persons like Nanda Maharaj and all the other coward men and their wives, and on the other side, Vasudeva, his father Surasena, and all his relatives born in the family of Vishnu of the Yadu dynasty, along with all their friends and well-wishers, were actually demigods. Narada warned Kamsa to be careful of them, since Kamsa and his friends and advisors were all demons. Demons are always afraid of demigods. After being thus informed by Narada about the appearance of the demigods in different families, Kamsa at once became very much alarmed. He understood that since the demigods had already appeared, Lord Vishnu must be coming soon. He at once arrested both his brother-in-law, Vasudev and Devaki, and put them behind prison bars. Within the prison, shackled in iron chains, Vasudev and Devaki gave birth to a male child year after year, and Kamsa, thinking each of the babies to be the incarnation of Vishnu, killed them one after another. He was particularly afraid of the eighth child. But after the visit of Narada, he came to the conclusion that any child might be Krishna. Therefore, it was better to kill all the babies who took birth from Devaki and Vasudev. This action of Kamsa is not very difficult to understand. In the history of the world, there are many instances of persons in the royal order who have killed their father, brother, or whole family and friends for the satisfaction of their ambitions. There is nothing astonishing about this, for members of the demoniac, greedy royal order can kill anyone for their nefarious ambitions. Kamsa was made aware of his previous birth by the grace of Narada. He learned that in his previous birth he had been a demon of the name Kalanemi, and that he had been killed by Vishnu. Having now taken his birth in the Bhoja family, he decided to become the deadly enemy of the Yadu dynasty. Krishna was going to take birth in that family, and Kamsa was very much afraid that he would be killed by Krishna, just as he had been killed in his last birth. He first of all imprisoned his father, Ugrasena, because he was the chief king among the Yadu, Bhoja, and Andhika dynasties, and he also occupied the kingdom of Surasena, Vasudev's father. He declared himself the king of all such places. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the first chapter of Krishna, the advent of Lord Krishna. So, still have some time. We're going to continue. Chapter 2. Prayers by the demigods for Lord Krishna in the womb. King Kamsa not only occupied the kingdom of the Yadu, Bhoja, and Andhika dynasties and the kingdom of Surasena, but he also made alliances with all the other demoniac kings as follows: the demon Pralamba, demon Baka, demon Chanura, demon Trinavarta, demon Agasura, demon Mustika, demon Arista, demon Dravida, demon Putana, demon Keshi, and demon Denuka. At that time, Jarasundha was the king of Magda province, known at present as Bihar state. Thus, by his diplomatic policy, Kamsa consolidated the most powerful kingdom of his time under the protection of Jarasundha. He made further alliances with such kings as Banasura and Bhomasura until he was the strongest. Then he began to behave most inimically toward the Yadu dynasty, into which Krishna was to take his birth. Being harassed by Kamsa, the kings of the Yadu, Bhoja, and Andhika dynasties began to take shelter in different states, such as the state of the Kurus, the state of the Panchalas, and the states known as Kekaya, Salva, Vidarbha, Nisada, Videha, and Kosala. Kamsa broke the solidarity of the Yadu kingdom, as well as the Bhoja and Andhika. He made his position the most solid within the vast tract of land, known at that time as Bhartavarsha. When Kamsa was killing the six babies of Devaki and Vasudev, one after another, many friends and relatives of Kamsa approached him and requested him to discontinue these heinous activities. But all of them became worshippers of Kamsa. When Devaki became pregnant for the seventh time, a plenary expansion of Krishna known as Ananta appeared within her womb. Devaki was overwhelmed with both jubilation and lamentation. She was joyful, for she could understand that Lord Vishnu had taken shelter within her womb. But at the same time, she was sorry that as soon as her child would come out, Kamsa would kill him. At that time, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, being compassionate upon the Yadus, who were fearful due to the atrocities committed by Kamsa, ordered the appearance of Yogamaya, his internal potency. Krishna is the Lord of the universe, but he is especially the Lord of the Yadu dynasty. Yogamaya is the principal potency of the personality of Godhead. In the Vedas, it is said that the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has multi-potencies. Parasya Shaktir Vividhaiva Shruyate. All the different potencies are acting externally and internally, and Yogamaya is the chief of all potencies. The Lord ordered the appearance of Yogamaya in the land of Rajabhumi in Vrindavan, which is always decorated and full with beautiful cows. In Vrindavan, Rohini, one of the wives of Vasudeva, was residing at the house of King Nanda and Queen Yasoda. Not only Rohini, but many others in the Yadu dynasty were scattered all over the country due to their fear of the atrocities of Kamsa. Some of them were even living in the caves of the mountains. The Lord thus informed Yogamaya, "Under the imprisonment of Kamsa are Devaki and Vasudeva, and at the present moment, my plenary expansion, Sesha, is within the womb of Devaki. You can arrange the transfer of Sesha from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. After this arrangement, I am personally going to appear in the womb of Devaki with my full potencies. Then I shall appear as the son of Devaki and Vasudeva, and you shall appear as the daughter of Nanda and Yasoda in Vrindavan. Since you will appear as my contemporary sister, and since you will quickly satisfy desires for sense gratification, people within the world will worship you with all kinds of valuable presentations, incense, candles, flowers, and offerings of sacrifice. People who are after materialistic perfection will worship you under the different forms of your expansions, which will be named Durga, Bhadrakali, Vijaya, Vaishnavi, Kumuda, Chandika, Krishna, Madhavi, Kanyaka, Maya, Narayani, Ishani, Sarada, and Ambika." Krishna and Yogamaya appeared as brother and sister, the Supreme Powerful and the Supreme Power. Although there is no clear distinction between the powerful and the power, power is always subordinate to the powerful. Those who are materialistic are worshippers of the power, but those who are transcendentalists are worshippers of the powerful. Krishna is the supreme powerful, and Durga is the supreme power within the material world. Actually, people in the Vedic culture worship both the powerful and the power. There are many hundreds and thousands of temples of Vishnu and Devi, and sometimes they are worshipped simultaneously. The worshipper and the power, Durga, or the external energy of Krishna, may achieve all kinds of material success very easily, but anyone who wants to be elevated transcendentally must engage in worshipping the powerful in Krishna consciousness. The Lord also declared to Yogamaya, "My plenary expansion, Ananta, Sesh, is within the womb of Devaki, on account of being forcibly attracted to the womb of Rohini. He will be known as Sankarshan, and will be the source of all spiritual power, or Bala, by which one can attain the highest bliss of life, which is called Ramana. Therefore, the plenary portion Ananta will be known after his appearance, either as Sankarshan or as Balaram." In the Upanishads, it is stated, "Nayam Atma Bala Hinena Labhya." The purport is that one cannot attain the supreme platform of self-realization without being sufficiently favored by Balaram. Bala does not mean physical strength. No one can attain spiritual perfection by physical strength. One must have the spiritual strength which is infused by Balaram, or Sankarshan, Ananta, or Sesha, is the source of the power which sustains all the planets in their different positions. Materially, this sustaining power is known as the law of gravitation, but actually, it is a display of the potency of Sankarshan, Balaram, or Sankarshan. It is a source of spiritual power, or the original spiritual master. Therefore, Lord Nityananda Prabhu, who is also the incarnation of Balaram, is the original spiritual master. And the spiritual master is the representative of Balaram, the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who supplies spiritual strength. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is confirmed that the spiritual master is the manifestation of the mercy of Krishna. Thus ordered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yogamaya circumambulated the Lord and then appeared within this material world according to his order. When Yogamaya, the supreme power of the supremely powerful personality of Godhead, transferred Lord Sesha from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini, both Devaki and Rohini were under Yogamaya's spell, which is called Yoga Nidra. When this was done, people thought that Devaki's seventh pregnancy had been a miscarriage. Thus, although Balaram appeared as a son of Devaki, he was transferred to the womb of Rohini to appear as her son. After this arrangement, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who is always ready to protect his unalloyed devotees, entered within the mind of Vasudeva as the Lord of the whole creation, with full inconceivable potencies. It is understood in this connection that Lord Krishna, first of all, situated himself in the unalloyed heart of Vasudeva, and when then transferred to the heart of Devaki, he was not put into the womb of Devaki by seminal discharge. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, by his inconceivable potency, can appear in any way. It is not necessary for him to appear in the ordinary way by seminal injection within the womb of a woman. When Vasudeva was sustaining the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart, he appeared just like a glowing sun, whose shining rays are always unbearable and scorching to the common man. The form of the Lord situated in the pure, unalloyed heart of Vasudeva is not different from the original form of Krishna. The appearance of the form of Krishna anywhere, and specifically within the heart, is called Dhamma. Dhamma refers not only to Krishna's form, but also to his name, his qualities, his paraphernalia. Everything becomes manifest simultaneously. Thus, the eternal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with full potencies was transferred from the mind of Vasudeva to the mind of Devaki, exactly as the setting sun's rays are transferred to the full moon rising in the east. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thus entered the body of Devaki from the body of Vasudeva without being subject to any of the conditions of an ordinary living entity. Since Krishna was there, it is to be understood that all the plenary expansions such as Narayan and incarnations like Narasimha and Varaha were with him. They also were not subject to the conditions of material existence. In this way, Devaki became the residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is one without a second and the cause of all creation. Devaki became the residence of the Absolute Truth, but because she was confined within the house of Kamsa, she looked just like a suppressed fire, or like misused education. When fire is kept in a jug, the illuminating rays of the fire cannot be very much appreciated. Similarly, misused knowledge, which does not benefit the people in general, is not very much appreciated. So Devaki was kept within the prison walls of Kamsa's palace, and no one could see her transcendental beauty, which resulted from her conceiving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kamsa, however, saw the transcendental beauty of his sister, Devaki, and he at once concluded that the Supreme Personality of Godhead had taken shelter in her womb. She had never before looked so wonderfully beautiful. He could distinctly understand that there was something wonderful within the womb of Devaki. In this way, Kamsa became perturbed because he was sure that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who would kill him in the future, had now come. Kamsa began to think, what is to be done with Devaki? Surely she has Vishnu or Krishna within her womb. So it is certain that Kamsa has come to execute the mission of the demigods. And even if I immediately kill Devaki, his mission cannot be frustrated. Kamsa knew very well that no one can frustrate the purpose of Vishnu. Any intelligent man can understand that the laws of God cannot be violated. His purpose will be served in spite of all impediments offered by the demons. Kamsa thought, if I kill Devaki at the present moment, Vishnu will enforce his supreme will more vehemently. To kill Devaki just now would be the most abominable act. No one desires to kill his reputation, even in an awkward situation. If I kill Devaki now, my reputation will be spoiled. Devaki is a woman, and she is under my shelter. She's pregnant, and if I kill her, immediately my reputation, the results of my pious activities, and my duration of life will all be finished. He further deliberated. A person who is too cruel is as good as a dead, even in this lifetime. No one likes a cruel person during his lifetime, and after his death, people curse him. On account of his self-identification with the body, he must be degraded and pushed into the darkest region of hell. Kamsa thus meditated on all the pros and cons of killing Devaki at that time. Kamsa finally decided not to kill Devaki right away, but to wait for the inevitable future. But his mind became absorbed in animosity against the personality of Godhead. He patiently waited for the delivery of the child, expecting to kill him, and as he had done previously with the other babies of Devaki. Thus being merged in the ocean of animosity against the personality of Godhead, he began to think of Krishna or Vishnu while sitting, while sleeping, while walking, while eating, while working, in all the situations of his life. His mind became so much absorbed in the thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that indirectly he could only see Krishna or Vishnu around him. Unfortunately, although his mind was so absorbed in the thought of Vishnu, he is not recognized as a devotee because he was thinking of Krishna as an enemy. The state of mind of a great devotee is also to be always absorbed in Krishna. But a devotee thinks of him favorably, not unfavorably. To think of Krishna favorably is Krishna consciousness. But to think of Krishna unfavorably is not Krishna consciousness. So it's 15 after. We can stop there and we'll continue till we get to Krishna's birth. Jai. All right. Thank you for your kind attention. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam, all glories to Krishna book. Kijai. Jai. That is a lot. So that's when Lord Brahma talks about Brahma.